Thank you. Be seated.
I'd like to welcome everyone to the Second Court of Appeals this morning. My name is Bonnie Sedderth. I'm the Chief Judge of the Court. To my right is Justice Elizabeth Kerr, and to my left is Justice Wade Birdwell. Will the Clerk of the Court please announce the case?
The Court will now call City of San Francisco et al. versus Sun Mobile Corporation. And then the Court, Mr. Michael Rubin to argue for the appellant, Mr. Ralph Duggan to argue for the appellant.
You may proceed.
Please the court. In the summer of 2017, seven cities and counties in California filed a series of lawsuits in California state court under California state law against almost three dozen companies with headquarters and operations throughout the world, including Exxon Incorporated in New Jersey and headquartered here in Texas. After Exxon responded with its Rule 202 petition in Tarrant County, 16 of these public entities and their highest level public officials and attorneys, city attorneys, mayors, city administrators, filed special appearances supported by affidavits. Those affidavits showed that none of the 16 potential defendants had done any business in Texas, had entered into any contracts in Texas, had any real or personal property in Texas, or had any contacts with the state, sought any profit from the state, or sought to avail themselves in any way from the laws of the state of Texas. The district court, nonetheless, denied those special appearances based solely on the fact that the California entities had filed those lawsuits in California because there were potential consequences from that lawsuit on Exxon in Texas. That was reversible error. For more than 30 years, the case law has been uniform that specific personal jurisdiction cannot be based on the effects of out-of-state conduct on an in-state resident. There has to be purposeful availment of the state itself. And that's been clear in cases from this court, the Texas Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, and appellate courts in state and federal courts throughout the country. Exxon has not cited a single case in which the filing of an out-of-state lawsuit by a non-resident against an in-state resident constitutes purposeful availment of the state for special personal jurisdiction purposes. If Exxon were right, and if the mere filing of a lawsuit in an out-of-state court against a Texas resident were sufficient to establish specific personal jurisdiction, then any time anyone filed a lawsuit against a Texas resident, that person could be, or entity, as in this case, could be hailed into the Texas courts and brought to account for the alleged consequences of that suit and be subject to a Rule 202 petition to discover whether there is any basis for proceeding against that out-of-state individual. And it works both ways. A Texas resident who files a lawsuit or engages in any conduct in Texas that refers to or criticizes the speech or conduct of an out-of-state company or individual could be hauled into that other state's courts to respond to it. There are no limiting principles to the theory that Exxon advances in this appeal and that the district court accepted, because if the focus for purpose of specific personal jurisdiction were merely on the potential chilling effect of an out-of-state lawsuit or out-of-state conduct, then any suit or any conduct, including any criticism or comment on a company's speech or actions, or any criticism or lawsuit or conduct criticizing an individual's speech or actions would be sufficient to establish specific personal jurisdiction. And the law has been uniform for decades that that's not the case.
Now, how do you distinguish the TV Azteca case that Exxon relies on?
Sure. The TV Azteca case, as Justice Birdwell noted in the parenthetical describing that case in the Ozo Capital, involved two separate issues. The first issue was whether defamation of a Texas resident with the intent to cause harm in Texas is sufficient for specific personal jurisdiction. And the Supreme Court said no. There must be more than that. You've got to do more than simply direct a tort at an in-state resident. It doesn't matter if you foresee that you will cause harm to that Texas resident in Texas, and it doesn't matter if you intend to cause harm to that Texas resident in Texas. The second part of TV Azteca, which is consistent with Hustler versus Keaton, it's Keaton versus Hustler, with Calder versus Jones, and all of the other defamation cases, is specific personal jurisdiction in a libel or defamation case is based on the purposeful availment of the state's commercial markets. What happened in TV Azteca, as the Supreme Court pointed out, was that the Mexican broadcaster had 1 million customers in Texas, had contracts with more than 100 advertisers in Texas. This particular show was aimed at a target audience from which that broadcaster earned continuous and significant profits. So our case is the first part of TV Azteca. It is directing a tort, as Exxon contends, against an in-state resident. But you've got to have more than that. You've got to purposely avail yourself of the state and not just seek to recover from an in-state resident. And so that's the principal distinction of TV Azteca, and it's the reason why none of the other libel or defamation cases apply. There is no subscription to 600,000 residents in the state or a magazine read by more than 1 million residents, as in Calder versus Jones. There isn't, as in Paul Gilrey, a specialized journal that earns its profits from the state where the defamation was owned. There are no commercial interests in this case at all.
Although I guess Exxon could say that there's a negative commercial interest that if you're quelling of their free speech as they allege causes it to suffer some sort of commercial damage in Texas. I don't know if they're going that far, but I guess you would disagree that that's even possible.
Let's assume
legally.
That they are. And so what does that mean? That means that Exxon is arguing the merits of the case. And in fact, most of the findings by the district court in this case pertained to the ultimate merits of Exxon's threatened abuse of process in Section 1983 action. It is possible that Exxon would at some point make that argument, which certainly it could make as a counterclaim in the California case. But putting that aside, it is clear from Old Republic, it is clear from footnote 9 in Ozo, it is clear from Michiana that in determining specific personal jurisdiction, the courts may not consider the merits. The courts may only look at the conduct involved. Because otherwise, as the courts have pointed out so many times, whether someone is liable or not ultimately determines a jurisdictional issue. So if you put aside, as I think you must, Justice Kerr, if you put aside the ultimate merits, it doesn't matter what the California entities did or did not intend. You can only look to what they did. And what they did is they filed lawsuits. They served process, which you do all the time in filing a lawsuit. They haven't yet sought discovery. But presumably, if the cases ever get out of the Ninth Circuit, where they're all now, all trial proceedings are stayed, but if they get out of the Ninth Circuit, they will be seeking discovery, as everyone does in the course of litigation. All that's left is this potential chill on First Amendment rights, and that's ultimately the merits issue of the abusive process case if more is done than the mere filing of a lawsuit, because that's not abusive process, as we know, or perhaps the constitutional claim, although there's no First Amendment right to engage in misrepresentations, which is the argument in the California case, but ultimately it ties up to the merits. So put the merits aside, look at the conduct. The conduct is simply the filing of lawsuits in California. There is no limiting principle, because if there's special personal jurisdiction here based on that filing, there would always be specific personal jurisdiction whenever anyone filed a lawsuit or referred to speech or associational activities or criticized speech or associational activities wherever in the country that happened.
But there's no limiting principle on the theory that's being asserted in the lawsuits either. Okay, you're saying this is a public nuisance specific to California, and invoking conduct by Exxon here with regard to a public nuisance in California, yet the basis for the public nuisance in California is the climate globally understood. So how are we to apply traditional notions, okay, when the actual remedy being sought here appears to be of a global nature, which does in fact impact every citizen in the state of Texas with regard to the climate in Texas? In other words, the city of San Francisco, the city of San Mateo, appears to be making some type of argument that they are entitled to influence the climate in a different state. Why is that not a basis for general jurisdiction as opposed to specific?
Because you have to focus on the actors themselves. The actors themselves.
Ordinarily, I would agree with you, but that's with regard to specific conduct in a specific locale and whether or not that actor can be brought in. You're seeking a remedy in California that will have not a remedy that's local to California.
The answer to that is that the premise of your argument is, with due respect, incorrect. The allegations in the California case, which are based on a California statute, are limited by statute to equitable abatement of injury caused not to anyone in Texas, not to anyone in any other state, but to the people of the state of Texas. The abatement, all you can get in a public nuisance case under 731, is equitable abatement for past harms or the consequences of past harms that apply to the public entities. So the cost of building new seawalls in California is one of the injuries that can be abated. There is no allegation, nor is there any authority for the public entities in California to seek any remedy that has any impact on the citizens of Texas or climate change in Texas. That lawsuit does not ask that Exxon going forward act differently at all. That lawsuit, by statute, is limited to Exxon contributing to a fund, along with the 36 other defendants, to abate specific harms caused by past conduct that affects California alone. So there is neither general jurisdiction over the actors nor specific personal jurisdiction, because the lawsuit itself, the act of filing a lawsuit, whatever its consequences, does not seek a remedy and by law is precluded from seeking a remedy that involves the state of Texas. Secondly, there are many cases that point out the happenstance of where a in-state resident happens to be. If there were spillover effects, it would be happenstance as to where they are. Arguably, I suppose, a logical extension of the argument would be that there is specific personal jurisdiction in every single jurisdiction in every state and country in the world in a certain type of climate change. There's certainly been no court that has ever applied the rules of personal jurisdiction that way, and the due process principles that underlie specific personal jurisdiction would preclude it, because by seeking a remedy under state law in state courts for state harm and exclusively state harm, the public entities in California have done nothing to avail themselves of the benefit of this state's laws or this state's markets. And
but if you ultimately, take ultimately, the cause of action will require a California court to make a determination of global cause, which implicates the state of Texas and citizens in the state of Texas. So I understand what you're arguing about your position with regard to it's a remedy specific to the locale, but part of the argument that's being made is that the litigation is aimed in part at obtaining findings that will injure not only
but
Exxon.
Actually under California public nuisance law, and you can look to the County of Santa Clara case, the most recent decision by the California Court of Appeal as to which the Supreme Court just denied review, the only causal issue there is the impact of the specific defendant's actions on the effects of climate change in California. There will be no focus on the other issues that you're addressing. There's nothing in the complaints that require, the California complaints, that require that type of focus.
So those complaints are specific to conduct that's been engaged in by Exxon in California.
That has California impacts, and the causal issue
is different. That's different. You're saying if it's impacting in California, it can occur any place else. It can occur in Timbuktu as long as it's occurring in California. That's not what you said before, which is that the conduct in question is the conduct in California.
No, it's the consequences of conduct that can occur anywhere in the world, not just in Texas. In fact, most of it doesn't occur in Texas. Focusing, including the misrepresentations and the promotion that has resulted in adverse consequences to the infrastructure of California cities and towns. And the only question is the extent to which the various defendants, including defendants based in the Netherlands, based in California, based elsewhere, are responsible for the particular harm suffered by the California entities. There is no purposeful availment. There is an effect. There is an impact on every entity, where defendant, wherever it does business. But as the cases make clear, having an impact on a company like Exxon, even in its home state, is not sufficient for specific personal jurisdiction.
Thank you.
May it please the court, in my presentation today, I'd like to discuss three items. First, this is not a typical special appearance, so authorities dealing with conventional torts don't address the situation, which is one where California cities and counties seek to broadly regulate speech in Texas. Number two, the trial court's decision was not based on guesswork, and it was based instead on an unchallenged record, uncontroverted evidence that the appellants purposefully targeted Texas, seeking to affect speech of its oil and gas industry in order to restrict the use of fossil fuels. And last, I'll touch on the long arm. This is not a DTPA claim by a Texas resident who reached out to Indiana to buy an RV, as the case was in Michiana. It's instead one to investigate claims under the First Amendment and the Texas Constitution for viewpoint discrimination. And the principal claim is based on the fact that suits were filed and served in Texas that importantly target the state because they target the fossil fuel industry and the speech of that industry.
Could you bring these allegations as a counterclaim in the California suits?
We have alleged there's no jurisdiction over Exxon in those cases, and we're not going to pursue that remedy. We believe the remedy, if it is filed, it should be filed here. The evidentiary record here demonstrates three things. First, that Exxon's evidence was admitted without objection, and it was not controverted by the appellant's affidavits or by live testimony. That evidence shows that appellant Paulo was the ringleader who promoted the use of tort suits to pressure the oil industry to adopt their view of climate change and to convert to renewable energy. At the hearing, PAWA's counsel acknowledged the legitimacy of very key pieces of evidence, including the La Jolla playbook, the Rockefeller meeting, and PAWA's own memo, where he advocated the very strategy that the cities and counties employed here. The evidence shows that the appellants then filed tort actions against what they called Big Oil to force the industry to change its viewpoint and to convert to renewables.
Let's assume all that is true. Are you really urging us, though, to move back toward an effects test that I think the U.S. Supreme Court and certainly our state Supreme Court have been moving away from?
I'm not advocating that, Your Honor. I think that the case, this is such an unusual factual record. The one case that comes closest here is the Calder decision. But the application of Calder is stronger here because the record reflects that the government is regulating speech because of its content. Calder confirms that where intentional, tortious activity connects the defendants to the forum state as opposed to just the plaintiff, then the defendants are subject to jurisdiction. And that's what we have here. In Calder, jurisdiction was upheld because of the nature of libel. The tort occurs where the offending material is circulated. California was not just the focal point of the story, it was where the predominant number of copies of the story were distributed. Here, because of the parties sued and the prominence of the oil and gas business to Texas, Texas is the focal point of the suits and of the harm suffered. 40% of this nation's crude oil, 30% of its natural gas, and over half of the upstream jobs in this country are in Texas. No state comes close to Texas when it comes to the fossil fuel industry. And let me turn to the allegations in the complaint. And I'll talk about one out of the San Mateo complaint, although those complaints are representative of the others. It names 37 companies, 17 of which are based in Texas, including Anadarko, Apache, ConocoPhillips, Exxon, and Shell. Those complaints expressly target and call out speech of those companies. Here's one of the allegations. Defendants promoted their fossil fuel products through advertising campaigns in order to influence public perception on the existence of global warming and sea level rise. The complaint then alleges that speech is wrongful promotion of fossil fuels that caused injury.
Would it matter at all whether the speech, I mean, let's say that Mr. Tillerson had been giving speeches 90% of the time in New York City about these issues as opposed to in Texas. Is there some sort of quantitative measure that we ought to be focusing on where Exxon's speech occurred as opposed to the fact that it did occur?
Well, it's targeted at the not just Exxon, and this was a big distinction. They argued, well, it's targeted against Exxon. The complaints target 17 Texas oil companies, and their speech is formulated where those companies are headquartered. And so while Tillerson may give a speech in New York, the speech and the policy on climate change, for example, is determined in Texas. And that's why these suits target the state as opposed to just Exxon. And several cases in our brief confirm that when a First Amendment claim is at issue, it's where the suppression occurs, not where the decision to suppress is made.
But you could win the California suits and not have any chilling effect, I suppose.
Well, I'm not sure that changes it. That the fact is you have government action that targets speech that is formulated in Texas by an industry that predominates the economy of this state. And very interestingly, after these suits were filed, 15 different attorneys general filed an amicus in support of the oil companies, including Attorney General Ken Paxton. And they noted that the suits were nothing more than political litigation against Texas and the other states. Here are two statements out of those amicus briefs. In effect, plaintiffs would be imposing limitations on commerce that takes place wholly outside California's borders. Second, plaintiffs are attempting to export their preferred environmental policies and their corresponding economic effects to other states. And that's one of the things that's targeted here. It's to impact the oil and gas industry. There's a robust record of other evidence. Barbara, you going to ask a question?
No.
There's robust record here of other evidence that further supports Judge Wallace's ruling, starting with this La Jolla playbook that arose out of a climate workshop in 2012. PAWA, who is the founder of the Global Warming Legal Action Project, was a key speaker. The summary stated that the fossil fuel industry had taken a page from the tobacco industry's playbook by adopting a strategy of manufacturing uncertainty about global warming. Well, guess what? The Oakland and San Francisco complaints that PAWA signed use that same vernacular in the complaints. This is a quote from those two complaints. Defendants barred the big tobacco playbook in order to promote their products. And the San Mateo complaint makes a similar statement at paragraph 133. And the fact that the San Mateo complaints use this PAWA, this La Jolla playbook, ties them to PAWA. Importantly, Your Honors, none of their affidavits deny that PAWA, they had communications with PAWA. They don't deny that he had involvement. This is the San Mateo parties. And the conclusion to that workshop reflects that the participants agreed to promote legal actions to pressure the industry to support legislative responses to global warming and to convert to renewable energy. That's at pages 27 and 8 of that summary. Then you fast forward to the Rockefeller meeting in 2016. PAWA was there, and they were there to strategize on what the record reflects was an Exxon campaign. It's a very important piece of evidence tying PAWA to the very strategy these California cities used. One of the goals was to delegitimize ExxonMobil as a political actor, that is, silence its voice. Exxon, of course, is viewed as the proxy, by many as the proxy for the industry. And to achieve the goals of that Exxon campaign, the participants urged the use of tort suits, just like what was later filed a year later. The next piece of evidence are the parties' own bond filings. Each of these complaints are premised on imminent rise in the sea level, each of them. But you can't reconcile the allegations in the complaints with the same parties' bond filings. San Mateo's complaint says there's a 50% chance of sea level rise in just 11 years. Yet its bond disclosure states it's unable to predict any impacts of climate change, including whether the sea level would rise.
No, but these are merits-based facts.
Well,
primarily,
there's an indication of that the complaints are pretextual, and they didn't deny any of this. Your Honor, you have to examine some of this because of the purposeful availment. Did these parties purposefully choose to try to affect the oil and gas business in this state?
And if you're talking, though, about trying to chill Exxon's free speech, for example, and you mentioned earlier in your presentation that they formulate their strategy at their headquarters, but that's in Dallas County, isn't it? Is there a reason that we're here in Tarrant County?
Well, venue is not before the court today, of course. That would be taken up next.
I was just curious.
Fair question, but I think that that's yet to be addressed. Exxon does have a basis to allege venue in this county, and we'll address that if we get there. I would like to point out, when it comes to San Mateo, that Mr. Beers, who's one of the appellants, signed those complaints, and he also reviewed the bond offerings, which say just the opposite of the complaints. The PAWA memo is another piece of evidence. That's what, one where he urged California to file nuisance cases against, quote, certain fossil fuel companies, most notoriously Exxon, to address what he called a campaign and conspiracy of deception and denial on global warming. Campaign of deception and denial. Right after the Oakland and San Francisco suits were filed, the two cities' attorney, Parker and Reeskin, held a joint press conference and used that same language in the press conference. Parker stated, this is the Oakland city attorney, "I'm pleased to join Herrera in suing Big Oil, declaring the oil companies had engaged in a campaign of deception and denial." That's right out of Pawa's memo in the evidence. The long arm, quickly. Your Honor, as Justice Birdwell noted in the Ozo opinion, the long arm statute is very broad. The plain text simply refers to a non-resident who commits a tort in this state. It does not exclude municipalities or municipal employees. And the definition of non-resident, which is not exclusive, simply says it includes any individual who is not a resident. The cases in our brief that are Texas authorities implicitly apply the long arm. Those are in the Beaver, Oklahoma, and the Infante case, which is Dallas Court of Appeals and Amarillo. Finally, even if they were right about the interpretation of the long arm, it wouldn't apply to Pawa because he is not. There's no evidence he's an employee of an individual of a municipality. In conclusion, I would like to say, summarize by saying, the evidence in this record reflects that the appellants, and especially Pawa, each purposefully created a connection with Texas with pretextual suits that targeted speech the appellants don't like, speech that was and is made in Texas by fossil fuel companies located in Texas in order to affect the use of fossil fuels in Texas. Seizing on one of my colleagues' arguments in the opening argument, to affect the commercial market in Texas would be sufficient. Well, that speech is designed to affect Texas' biggest commercial market, the oil and gas industry. Due process has been satisfied on this record. We urge the court to affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to principally address Justice Kerr's questions about the merits. Before we do that, I want to clarify one point. Yes, of course, Exxon can pursue any claims it might have as a counterclaim in California, although counsel states that Exxon is challenging, ironically, personal jurisdiction in California. The Ninth Circuit has clearly held in Gates Learjet versus Jensen, which is 743 F. Second, 1325, that you do not waive your right to challenge personal jurisdiction by bringing a counterclaim in the state or the federal courts.
Let me interrupt you for one second before you continue with your remarks. I'm just curious, when we're talking about the Texas long-arm statute,
yes,
it does say includes an individual, et cetera, et cetera. I think the Texas government code makes clear that the word includes is not a limiting sort of word at all, so explain to me why it is that you think that we wouldn't theoretically be able to have jurisdiction over an individual who works for a government entity or perhaps even a foreign government entity itself.
Right. If the individual is acting in that individual's official capacity, which each of the potential defendants in this case were, acting as the city attorneys, as the mayors, as the city administrators, in the case of Mr. Pawa, as the outside counsel, then they are treated as the public entity itself. And as we noted under California Code of Civil Procedure 731, a public nuisance case is brought on behalf of the people of the state of California. So that lawsuit that was filed in California is brought on behalf of the people. These individuals are sued or threatened to be sued or the subject of the 202 petition precisely because they are officials of these various entities. It is a matter of statutory construction as to whether it includes, usually when construing a statute, you look to the, it's the justum generis doctrine, you look to the categories that are identified for the same reasons Judge Jones in the Fifth Circuit case of Stroman construed this language as saying there is a limitation here, it does not apply to public entities, and as we pointed out in our briefs, for very good reasons, we do not believe that include expands the list beyond those particular categories. With respect to what does it mean to target, I want to point out that if you actually take a look at the district court's ruling and the findings of fact, the word target is used in a way that's synonymous with focus on or directed at. For example, there was a reference to the La Jolla meeting. Well, the court said that at the La Jolla meeting, Mr. Power and other participants targeted speech. Some of that speech was made in Texas, some of that speech was made elsewhere. By targeted, the court is saying made reference to, cited, and perhaps criticized. Now, I talked before about there being no limiting principle. If
is it limited to just those synonyms? I mean, couldn't target mean more than that?
Target certainly could mean more than
and
that.
Couldn't the court have meant more than that?
But in the when the court said that Mr. Power at that La Jolla meeting targeted speech, it's very clear. In fact, there's another instance where it says targeted for, this is paragraph 30, targeted, for example, focused on. So it seemed as though that is the synonym that the judge was using. All that means, though, is that whenever a lawsuit refers to speech made by a defendant, that is targeting. That would give rise to specific personal jurisdiction under the analysis undertaken by the district court and urged here by Exxon. Exxon is talking about the potential consequences, not the actual consequences. Recall there's a distinction in the cases between unilateral activity of the subject of an action and the action of the out-of-state resident itself. Unilateral activity is one step beyond effects. The lawsuit had effects or will have effects at some point against Exxon. Exxon then may or may not choose to react in a particular way. It may choose to modify its speech in the future, but if effects on a Texas resident aren't enough under 30 years of case law to trigger specific personal jurisdiction, then a party's unilateral decision how to respond to those effects, which is not at issue in the lawsuit, because the lawsuit is not seeking to change Exxon's or anyone else's activities, and most importantly, it is not challenging Texas's speech. It is not.
How can you make that statement when the clear import of the allegations is that the speech that's being engaged in is deceptive, and through its deception, is creating the public nuisance that you're trying to ameliorate?
Well, if it is deceptive, it's not protected by the First Amendment. But yes, it's focusing on, as counsel pointed out, the reference to Mr. Tillerson's speech wherever it occurred. That's a fortuity. That's a happenstance of where he happens to be when he makes speech. But it is a challenge to past. The only references in the complaint are to past speech and seeking abatement, equitable abatement for the consequences of conduct that resulted in additional adverse impacts in California because of the knowing misrepresentation. But that's a merits issue. Whether, and the Ninth Circuit, because Judge Alsup dismissed the San Francisco and the Oakland case, the Ninth Circuit's ultimately going to determine whether there's any validity to those cases. The impacts that Exxon is talking about are future impacts that may occur. There may be a chill in the future, but the complaint doesn't seek to stop Exxon or any other company, no matter where in the world it is headquartered or operates, from doing anything or from speaking
anywhere. So by seeking damages for past speech, we're to take your word that it's not intended to in any way, shape, or form impact future speech of identical nature.
Even though there's evidence in the record that that's exactly what it's intended to do.
I'm saying, first of all, that the intent is irrelevant, and the courts are uniform on that. Is what the out-of-state actors intended plays no role whatsoever in the specific personal jurisdiction inquiry. The merits issue does focus on an abusive process case, whether process was abused, whether there was intent to chill. That is absolutely going to be one of the issues, but the courts tell us repeatedly as a matter of due process, intent is irrelevant for deciding whether someone has a due process right to be brought into the courts of another state when they could be sued in the state where all this occurred, and we have all the third factor, fair play and substantial justice reasons, but it legally, conceptually, it doesn't matter what may have been going on in the minds of the California entities. The findings that the district court made are ultimate merits findings that are not legally relevant to the specific personal jurisdiction inquiry. The only thing the court is permitted to consider in evaluating this due process issue is what did those California entities and high-level officials do, and where did they do it, and what they had no contacts with the state, they didn't seek the benefit of the state's laws, they sought no commercial benefit, and the affidavits make clear they have no presence here. That's why in a case like Old Republic, it made no difference that the Louisiana resident may have intended to defraud the purchaser of the house because of the tax lien. Her intent to defraud was irrelevant.
I think you've made your point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, we appreciate your arguments. They've been very helpful to us. Your case is now submitted, and the court is in recess.